Track 17. Our feature, Past Lives, is about the people who made our county great. One of the bravest men who ever lived. So said Viscount Templewood of the Cromer lifeboat coxswain Henry Blogg. Chris Armstrong traces his story.
Henry Blogg of Cromer, who died in 1954, was the most decorated lifeboat man of all time. A lifeboatman from the age of 18, he was chosen as coxswain of the Cromer boat in 1909 and continued in that role until his retirement in 1947, by which time he'd been responsible for saving 873 human lives, not to mention the occasional pet. He was a man of formidable courage and an outstanding leader with an encyclopedic knowledge of the sea and understanding of its moods. But he's not an easy character to get to know. He was a very private man, not a regular in the pub. Indeed, he became a total abstainer and non-smoker. His abstinence dated from one of his earliest launches as a lifeboatman, when he joined the rest of the crew in the pub to celebrate their safe return, drank rather more than he should have done, and disliked the after effects. He swore never to drink again, and he meant it. Henry Blogg was born in February 1876 in Cromer, just back from the pier and within the smell and sound of the sea. He remained in the town all his life. On his baptismal certificate, the vicar, in the rather censorious high moral tone of the age, described him as base-born, meaning that he was illegitimate. His father is not named on the certificate. His mother was Ellen Blogg. He spent his early childhood with his grandmother, but after a few years, Ellen married a fisherman, John Davies, and Henry went to live with them. John's father was coxswain of the Cromer lifeboat, and John was second coxswain. Henry's connection with the lifeboat dated from an early age. Henry attended Goldsmith's School, endowed by Sir Bartholomew Reed, a local boy made good, who became Lord Mayor of London, having been Master of the Mint when the first gold sovereigns were struck in 1489. Knighted by Henry VII in 1503, he died 2 years later, establishing by his will a foundation to teach gentlemen's sons, poor men's sons, and other good men's children of Cromer. He left the care of the school in the hands of the Goldsmiths' Company, who rebuilt it in 1821. When Henry went there, the school had about 70 pupils, probably split into two classes. He was a quick learner and at the high academic end of the roll, but there was work to do, and he left at the age of 11. On leaving school, Henry was immediately plunged into the life of a working fisherman, and his stepfather's crab boat replaced the classroom, as he learned the practical skills of oarsmanship, sailing and boat handling, together with the vital ancillary understanding of wind, sea and weather. He quickly and enthusiastically displayed an aptitude for the new skills he had to learn. Like Ratty in Wind in the Willows, he enjoyed messing about in boats, but Blogg did more. He used the practical skills and extraordinary understanding he acquired to lead a team which saved hundreds of lives and earn him a national, even international, reputation. Fame was not his ambition, but it was probably inevitable. On leaving school, he hadn't just become involved with boats. The family also rented out beach huts and bathing machines, and while working there, he became more aware of a young lady he'd known since childhood, Anne Brackenbury, who worked hiring out deck chairs. Well, the attraction was mutual, and they married in 1901. Anne must frequently have had to sit it out nervously as Henry launched into the worst of conditions to save the lives of other seamen. In an age without cell phones, internet, and in the early days even radio, and with the boat often out and out of contact for more than 24 hours, it must have been difficult. But Anne had her own brand of courage, and she needed it too. She and Henry lost their only son in infancy and their beloved daughter, Queenie, in her 20s. Some indicators of Blogg's character emerge most clearly from incidents during the two world wars, which punctuated his service. They show a man of courage, judgment, and particularly humanity. In the First World War, the lifeboat lost some of its younger crew members to the Navy and was manned by a crew with an average age of over 50, with some members approaching their 70s. The boat, the Louisa Hartwell, was powered only by sail and oars, and the physical demands on this ageing crew were immense, and the need for their services greater than ever. Perhaps their most demanding service was in January 1917, when, in the teeth of a 50-mile-an-hour gale, a distress signal was flown by the Pirin, a small Greek ship 2 miles off the coast. The conditions were appalling, and to make matters worse, it was close to low tide, so the Louisa Hartwell had to be pushed on a trolley across nearly 100 yards of wet sand. It took 40 helpers to get the boat to the sea, and it was only then that the real struggle to launch her began, with the boat being thrown back time and again in the furious seas. Eventually the launchers succeeded, and then the crew, 2 men to an oar, spent nearly 3 hours rowing out to the Pirin, from which they rescued 16 crew members, before a much faster return to the shore with the wind behind them. Hardly had the exhausted crew removed their saturated oilskins than Blogg became aware that another ship, the Furnabow, had struck a mine and split in two. The aft part of the ship, kept afloat because its cargo was timber, was drifting. At about 5 p.m., some 6 hours after the lifeboat had launched to go out to the Pirin, the stern ran aground about 150 yards from the beach, with her crew still on board. Conditions for launching the lifeboat had deteriorated even further, and after multiple attempts, the crew made way for rocket launchers, who, for nearly 4 hours, tried without success to fire a rocket into the gale accurately enough to get a line aboard the wreck. By now it was dark, and the scene was illuminated by searchlights from a nearby battery. The spectacle was being observed by a huge crowd who'd gathered to witness the rescue efforts. The failure of the rocket launchers left just one option, another attempt to launch the lifeboat. Conditions were near impossible, but Blogg put it to his men that the only possible way to save the lives of the men on the wreck was to go again. And they agreed, without demur, to risk their lives once more under his leadership. With huge difficulty, the boat was launched and set out again, but the seas were so violent that just one wave broke 5 oars and swept 3 more away. Swept back onto the shore, the crew replaced the oars, and a change in the tide pattern made another attempt feasible. This time, the launch was successful, and the Louisa Hartwell returned with the survivors. In recognition of remarkable service lasting something like 14 hours, Blogg was awarded the RNLI Gold Medal, nicknamed the Lifeboatman's VC. He was to win it twice more. "I suppose this means another confounded trip to London," was his reported response on hearing that he'd been awarded the British Empire Medal. His exploits in the Second World War were just as remarkable. Among these was the extraordinary episode in which no less than 6 ships, part of a convoy coming down the east coast in fog, simultaneously ran aground 20 miles off Cromer. Supported by other lifeboats and the 2 destroyers accompanying the convoy, the Cromer coxswain and his crew managed in the nick of time to rescue 88 crew members from 4 of the ships. Another 31 were rescued by the other lifeboats. Although the need for security restricted information about his exploits during the war, knowledge of Blogg spread nationwide. As in the First War, some of his crew were called up, and in April 1942, the Dundee Courier reported that Blogg had threatened to resign if he lost any more. Shortly afterwards, the Western press reported that the Ministry of Labour had responded, saying that no other Cromer lifeboat men would be called up in the near future. Henry Blogg had made his point, and shy though he was, he also made a wireless appeal on the home service of the BBC for funds for the lifeboats. The Derby Daily Telegraph reported a gift of £200, something like £9,000 in today's money, by an anonymous donor following the broadcast, so he was probably a better advocate than he realised. Shortly before Henry Blogg retired, Cromer had a new lifeboat, originally to be called the Millie Walton after a benefactor. She was renamed Henry Blogg at his retirement, a well-deserved tribute to a remarkable man whose achievements are recalled in the splendid RNLI Henry Blogg Museum at Cromer.